one of the great things about doing this is you get to talk with some absolutely incredible people, and our next guest is absolutely no exception to that. She's lived an extraordinary life. And I'll give you a few of the highlights here. A former head hooter at Hooters, a three-time Miss Australia winner after discovering beauty pageants, but behind the scenes, her life was far from glamorous. A former gangland girlfriend was the next point in her CV, which ended after a police raid, which saw her sustain horrific injuries from a flashbang grenade. Felicia Jamizan is her name, charged with drug trafficking alongside her boyfriend after that raid, but after pleading guilty and recovering from injuries, Felicia has gone down a very different path. She's now a counsellor and a women's advocate and is making a positive impact on the lives of other women rebuilding after criminal convictions. She's now written a book which details her life story. It's called Accessory, alongside Erin O'Dwyer. So to tell us more about what has been a remarkable life, I'm pleased to say that Felicia joins us on the line. Thanks for making the time this morning.
Thanks for having me.
No worries at all. I'd love to go back to the beginning of your life. What was like growing up for you?
I grew up in a housing commission in Tingabby in Blacktown. And, you know, when we grew up, it was really, really rich in culture. And majority of my family actually lived in that cul-de-sac. We also had some families from some war-torn countries as well, which was, you know, insightful growing up, having experience being friends with people and children that had went through things such as that. Now, the house that we lived in Debbie Way was the house that the Murphy brothers actually had lived in prior to us moving in. So that kind of paints a picture of, you know, the socio-economical background of where we were living at the time and what was going on in the area at the time.
Yeah. Were you aware of that as a kid?
I wasn't until I was a little bit older. But, you know, when I was quite small, no, I wasn't aware of that until I was probably maybe 8 or 9 years old. And then I started to kind of cotton on to things. And I was also told that where the housing estate was built, it was built on top of an old rubbish dump. So that, you know, conjures up all kinds of imaginary things for children, real or otherwise. But, yeah, we were told that it was actually built on top of an old dump.
Wow. Do you have happy memories of your childhood?
I do have a lot of happy memories of my childhood, but I think like anyone that's grown up with poverty and with addiction, that there's also really hard moments as well. So it's kind of a bit juxtaposed between really, really happy moments and then really, really hard and devastating and tragic moments as well.
Mm. And how did you go from that to getting involved in the world of beauty pageants? Was that something you always wanted to do?
Not really. Not really. I like how Head Hooter got put in the CV there. Thanks for that.
We do our research. In fact, I'm holding your book right now. I tried to apply, but they rejected me, unfortunately, so I'm a bit jealous.
Next time.
Yeah.
No, it was never really in my list of things that I wanted to do or become. I actually wanted to be a social worker growing up when I was, you know, quite young. But I realized that it was a really easy way for me to be able to travel and for me to be able to win prizes and basically escape the life that I had for a new and different life that was completely different to the one that I was living.
Mm. And how did you go from that to getting involved with your partner?
Okay, so that's a very long story. You'll have to read the book. But basically, I was already embroiled in the underworld, so to speak, or as we call it. And I went out with my current partner, Dean, as I guess a form of protection in order to get protection from my ex-partner. And my ex-partner was quite violent, which we detail in the book. So trigger warning for anyone that's experienced domestic violence or violence. Mm. But, you know, I went through experiences where I was strangled, I was shot at, and I had asked, you know, for help. And there was no help available. And I just don't want other women to be you know, in that situation. I had to basically help and protect myself. When Gang Squad was aware that, you know, there was DV involved, they actually tried to leverage my safety and said, you know, if you give us this information, then we'll be able to help you with the DV issue. And I said, don't get it mixed up. DV and club issues are two completely different things and they should remain separate. And I declined them on that. But that never should have been used as leverage. So I just don't want to see any other women end up in a situation where they need to feel as though they have to protect themselves because there's no help out there for them. And I think there's still, 10 years later, a lot of women in that position now, which is unacceptable. Yeah.
Yeah, I completely agree. To walk me through the day when the police raided the home.
Okay, so we woke up to a really, really loud bang. And I actually thought that it was a home invasion. I didn't think it was the police. And, you know, I had an incredibly hot, burning feeling on my face, on my hand. So the grenade had actually hit my face and my hand, but I didn't know it was a grenade at that point. I actually thought I'd been shot in the face. So I thought, okay, this is a home invasion. I've been shot in the face. I'm just going to pretend to be dead for a bit so I can figure out my next steps of what I'm going to do now. And then I heard police, this is a raid, on this really loud, big loud speaker. Kind of reminded me of that song. Do you know that dance song, Police, This is a Raid?
Oh, I know it.
Kind of reminded me of that. Yep. Anyway, so then some more grenades started coming in and I still didn't know it was grenades because it's just so out of the box. It's so left field for grenades to be used. And, you know, the last time grenades were used in something like this was the Lent siege on Manmonis. So that didn't even cross my mind that it could have been that. And they're also very disorientating. So, you know, the sound and the smoke, et cetera. So I just started crawling towards the walk-in robe to try and get some kind of shelter from whatever was going on until I then realised it was grenades coming through the window, which is super surprising, you know.
Wow.
Wild.
Yeah, certainly. If you're just joining us, you're on 2SER. We're chatting with Felicia Jamizen about her new book. And you go from that to becoming a counsellor and an advocate for women with past convictions such as yourself. What sort of barriers do the women you've spoken to normally face in doing that after that conviction and speaking out?
What happens is, you know, you do the work. You do your time, so to speak, but it feels as though, and it is in reality, that the punishment continues on into other areas and aspects of your life. For example, getting a bank account, getting a loan, getting insurance, and being employed. So I was applying for jobs that I was well overqualified for. I had a double degree. I did my degree when I was on bail and I was getting rejected when I was disclosing my conviction history. And as soon as I chose to not disclose that in the initial stages, I was getting more jobs than what I could, you know, take, than what I could turn down. So that showed to me in real time what was actually going on with public perception. So, you know, women with conviction histories, they deserve a second chance. And they should be empowered to contribute to society by being able to work, raise their families, put a roof over their head. If you're working and you have a skill and you're able to go to work and earn money, you're able to look after yourself, your children. It stops children from being removed. It stops women from having to feel as though they need to stay within violent relationships just to be able to feed themselves and their kids. It empowers them. And it also stops you from going back inside. And it stops you from reoffending as well in a lot of ways. It's one of the key things. When you're ready to work, it's one of the key things. But a lot of women are ready to work. They're ready to contribute back to society, but they're unable to because no one's giving them a chance. So they're a very, very overlooked skill set in the workforce is women with conviction histories and men as well, but yeah. More so women, yeah.
I saw you mention in another interview that the colour of your skin and privilege probably contributed to keeping your freedom and avoiding prison. Have you seen examples of that with people you've spoken to who perhaps haven't been so lucky for those reasons?
Oh, yeah. Look, women's looks definitely come into play And so does race when you are sitting in front of a Supreme Court judge and jury. I was told that I need to look pretty, but not too pretty. I need to look good, but not too good. So I wonder if
the advice of a lawyer?
That's the advice across the board, yes, yeah. Correct. Because you don't want to be stereotyped, but you still are, right?
Yeah.
So, look, I could have been born with dark skin. My mother's Indigenous and her father was also African-American, but I'm fair-skinned. And if I had been born with darker skin, maybe the penalty would have been harsher for me. Mm. And I think it would have. So race is a really big thing that also needs to be discussed in sentencing. And also a lot of misidentification happens amongst our Indigenous women when there are call-outs for domestic violence and they are misidentified as the perpetrator and they're locked up.
Yep.
So that's something else that's, you know, probably a whole nother conversation. But these are things that are going on that people in society don't usually think about, hear about or talk about. But we have to, because it's the only way that we look at breaking intergenerational cycles of trauma is looking after our women, looking after our vulnerable, defending them and protecting them as, you know, the government would protect their borders with the same fierceness.
Yeah.
You know, but we don't. So that's something we need to look at doing.
Felicia, I could talk all morning, but unfortunately the clock has got us. Thank you so much for making the time.
No worries. I'll talk to you again, hopefully. Have a good day.
And you
Thanks
too.
Thanks for having me.
Felicia Jarmizen, an incredible story that's all documented in her book, Accessory. It's available now in all good bookstores.